Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Hello, everyone, and nice to be with you here on this crisp November day, if you will. A very special time of the year for me because, as you know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, I happen to be very proud of my service in the military. And I just want to also at this point say thank you to all of the veterans out there who are listening, those who are still in harm's way somewhere and those who have finished their service. I'd like to say thanks to all of those who are in service right now and those who finished their service and are now back home. We just celebrated Veterans Day, and I had the pleasure of being the host of a very special program each year, the 2015 American Veterans Center. It's an honors program, not unlike the Emmys or the Oscars, but in this case, we give awards out to those who have served their country and who have done extraordinary. You know, all of us are ordinary in the military. We come in, we offer our service. But every once in a while, we're required to do something extraordinary or extraordinary, if you will. And for those people over the different campaigns, whether it be World War II or the Vietnam War or the Korean War or the current situation in Afghanistan, ordinary people have become extraordinary because of what they've done. And to some of them, they've won some remarkable or they have achieved remarkable status. And at this event that we hosted on Saturday, and will air, the first one airs today, Sunday, and will air throughout the week, and you'll be able to see it. It's called the Honors Program, and what a delight it was. It was just a pleasure to be the host of it. And I want to say thank you to a number of people who were participating in that. First of all, the brainchild of James Roberts, who is the founder and president of the American Veterans Center. And to his staff, Tim Holbert and several others who worked very hard to make this a wonderful event. And then the lineup was just was phenomenal with the people that were in place who came to honor the veterans and who participated. And it was just one of those wonderful days where you had a chance to sit and listen to the stories that were told about these people. I was at the table sitting next to the man who actually has walked on the moon. Buzz Aldrin was in place there, and what a pleasure it was to be sitting next to him. And then the other people that were in place there were just, you know, phenomenal. There were four or five Medal of Honor honorees in place. All in the same room. So you can imagine what that felt like to the people there. A couple of folks who deserve your attention, the Northrop Grumman Corporation sponsored this event. Also, the folks from MOE, they were very much in place. Our thanks to Rodney Williams, who's executive vice president for MOE. And there was a special honor. And again, you can see this. The show will be airing on Reels TV, R-E-E-L-Z, and you can check to find out when they're going to carry it. But I invite you to go and have you'll be really inspired by what you see there. We also like to say a thank you to the honorary chairman, General Richard B. Myers, who shared the stage with us while we were sitting there. It was just one of those wonderful opportunities for everybody to say thank you for the service. And boy, did the show really come off? And as I said, I think you'll find it to be keenly of interest and entertaining. I'm not just sure when the Reels will carry it again. I know they carried it today, Sunday, at noon, and then they will repeat it, so you'll have a chance to see it if you want to. But anyway, to all of you, wherever you may be serving or who have served, from all of us here to you, we say thank you for your service. And I'm a proud member of that group who have served. Also, American Airlines was involved with this too. William Chatfield and his group over there made a difference in getting people to and from. I mean, everybody participated. It made it a wonderful thing. And it was an honor to be the master of ceremony for that. Okay? So to all of us servicemen this week and throughout the next week, and matter of fact, throughout the year, wherever you may be, you know that we care about you and we care what you're doing for us, protecting us so that we can do the things we do here in this great country. Speaking of doing things and protecting, think security, if you will. And if you think security, then I want you to then equate into this or add to the equation financial inclusion. What is financial security? My first guest today will be talking about that, and I think you will find it very interesting as we talk about a seminar, a webinar that's going to be held this week at the University of Wisconsin. Holly Leinhart is joining us to talk about this. She comes from Wisconsin, or at least that's where she is today, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her. But she's keenly involved in this. Let me just say hello to her, and then we'll take a break and come back. Holly, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me here. I really appreciate it.
This is exciting. I want you to tell us, explain how what this is, because I think you're looking for people to sign up for this. Is that right?
That's right. We have open registration. It's a free webinar, and we would love as many people interested to register and participate.
All right. When we come back, we will tell you why you should register and why you should participate and the importance of financial security to you. All of that coming up here on Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Glad to be with you here on the Radio America. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Holly Leinhart. She directs the outreach for the Center for Financial Security, CFS, at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This involves her producing webinars, which focus on dissemination of CFS household finance research, as well as providing resources and tools to practitioners in the financial capability field. Now, how does it impact you, and what does it mean for you? Holly is here to talk to us about that. Holly, thanks again for being with us here on Home and Family Finance.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. It's a great opportunity.
Explain to us the Center for Financial Security. What do you do, and why do you do it?
Sure, I would love to. So like you said, we are located at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our center is in the School of Human Ecology. We're connected to the consumer science program.
Mm-hmm.
The center is really focused on doing applied multidisciplinary research. Our main mission is to inform practitioners, policymakers, and really the public at large on strategies for building financial capability and security over all phases of life. We really focus on examining the role of specific products, policies, and techniques in helping individuals to navigate the financial marketplace, which is, as you know, increasingly complex.
Oh, is it ever?
Yes.
And so this is designed to kind of the people that are going to help the public. I mean, obviously the public is invited, but you're also kind of helping folks who are out there trying to help. Is that a fair statement?
Exactly. So we our research is obviously done in an academic capacity. And so the difficulty that a lot of academic institutions see is really trying to get research out to the public, out to the people who actually need to use it, the practitioners. So that's where we have designed this webinar series, which really takes that research and brings it directly into the hands of the people who need to use it.
And you use experts. I mean, I know that in the webinar you're going to have several folks who will be talking and explaining and share with us who you're bringing to the table here.
Okay, so our next webinar is going to be actually taking place next Tuesday, so November 17th, and it's going to be at 1 p.m. Eastern time. This webinar is going to be focusing on the National League of Cities organization, which recently completed a study that was about local financial inclusion efforts. So CFS collaborated on this project, and our senior research assistant, Leah Jurtzen, actually brought her expertise in data collection and analysis to this project. So Leah will be on the webinar presenting methodology of the scan. And then we do have Heidi Goldberg. She is a director at National League of Cities, NLC, and she's going to talk about the background and the context behind this study. So why did National League of Cities find it important to highlight what cities are doing on a local level and how city leaders, for instance, mayors, council members, city treasurers, et cetera, how they are working with community partners to increase the availability of financial education, how they are building pathways to safe and affordable financial services, et cetera. And we also will be having a couple discussants from two of the cities that were featured in the scan, including Johnny Dupree, who is the mayor of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. He's going to be speaking about why he has made financial inclusion a prominent part of his city's efforts, how this has increased financial stability for his residents, and then some new efforts that he has to come. We have someone from Lansing, Michigan, from the Office of Financial Empowerment, Amber Paxton. She's going to focus on the Financial Empowerment Center model, which is now in about 13 cities around the country. Yeah. And this model is how they offer free financial counseling with existing social services.
Do you find that the public has any idea about the programs that are in place to help them? That's why I think it's very important that they tune in and participate, right?
Sure. So, and that's actually a lot of what these cities have done is increasing awareness and increasing the outreach and the access to these programs. But you are right. Oftentimes, all these services can go under the radar, and they aren't reaching the people who are in need. So it's types of things like this, webinars, various outreach methods that can help connect the people in need to these services.
Okay. My guest, of course, as you can tell, is keenly involved in this. Hallie Leinhart is really making sure that this information gets out to the people that can also help you, but you can help yourself by listening and joining into the webinar, and you're welcome to do so. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the new strategies in the financial capability literacy field, something that you should know. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. You're listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Home and Family Finance, sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, DCUC, and ACUNA, the Credit Union National Association. We thank them for their continued support of the program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. Defense credit unions have been serving our U.S. military since 1928, folks. As nonprofit financial institutions, defense credit unions don't have stockholders to answer to. We have you, our member owners. It means lower fees, better rates, and always community-based, so defense credit unions understand the financial needs and challenges of a highly mobile membership. And because we are where you are, there's no need to walk outside the gates for service when you need a small dollar loan or just some real straight-up financial counseling. Of course, we have all of the other standard products and services like savings and checking accounts, auto loans, ATMs, and online banking, everything that you're going to find or you're going to need. For Department of Defense civilians, service members, retirees, National Guard, reserves, and their families, Defense Credit Unions are there for you at all stages of your active career and beyond. Defense Credit Unions, join once, become a member for life. Go to DCUC.org to find your nearest Defense Credit Union today. And as we always tell you, no matter whether you're in or out of the service, saving is such an important part of what you should be about. And then protecting your savings and your financial growth should be of importance to you. And it certainly is of importance to Hallie Leinhart, who's directing the outreach for the Center for Financial Security at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They are going to have a seminar or a webinar, if you will, on Tuesday, the 17th of November. And you're invited to join in. And I'm going to ask Hallie right now to tell you how you can do that. Hallie, if a member of our audience says, okay, I'd like to kind of tune in and listen, how do they do that?
So the easiest way is to go to our website, which is simply cfs.wisc, that's W-I-S-C, .edu. And there on our very front page, the home page of our website, is a link where you can actually just register very easily, and you will receive a link after that, which just allows you to log on at the time of the webinar. But rest assured, the webinar will be recorded as well, and so we do archive all of our webinars on our website, so anybody can access any webinar at any time for free.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the strategies in the financial capability literacy field. Explain to me, what is that? What's going on there?
Some new strategies that we do see developing in the field of financial capability are, for one thing, financial coaching is one area that CFS has become very involved with. This is a new technique that's really a complementary technique to counseling and education. It's a very client-centered and client-oriented approach, mm-hmm. where clients have the ability to seek their or put together action plans where then they can work towards financial goals. It's a great approach that is really gaining momentum in the field. It's a relatively new approach, but CFS does a lot of research surrounding this as well.
I think this, and what I'm suggesting, and if this works, is that if you don't, obviously practitioners should be there, but the public can be there, and then they can speak to the people that are helping them if they hear things that they think are tools that might be successful in serving their needs.
Yes, absolutely. On our webinars, we do offer a portion at the end where people can ask questions and answer and get answers from the experts. We offer a variety of ways outside of our webinars for people to access this information as well. We have actually trainings at the Center for Financial Security that we offer to practitioners, mm-hmm. Or people working in the field. We have several other kind of campaigns that we or initiatives that we also are working on. For instance, we have a Check Your Free Credit Report campaign, which is a program that allows people to receive text messages mm-hmm. three times yearly reminding them to check their free credit report. And so that's one of our initiatives that I think is really helpful in reminding people throughout the year that it's important to keep track of what's happening on your credit report.
You make up a very interesting point. We just have less than a minute to go, but that is there are tons of programs out there aimed at helping. All people have to do is to be aware of them, and that's part of what this is all about, making people aware of what's available to help them become financially literate and secure.
Exactly, and actually one excellent resource for keeping up on those resources is our website. We do provide people with a lot of interesting financial capability events and resources, and we try to offer that to people on a regular basis.
Holly Leinhart, thank you for taking time. I know you're busy. Thanks for joining us here on Home and Family Finance, and come back and see us again soon, would you please?
Thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciate it, and it was a lot of fun.
It is fun to talk about things that make people smarter when it comes to their financial capabilities. We'll be right back, folks, with more. Stay with us.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Pleased to have with us now Susan Garland from Kiplinger Retirement Report, Kiplinger Online. Folks, this is a very important time of the year. You hear this, and I don't know if you're like me. It's like, I'm confused. You know, what does it mean? It's open enrollment. I should enroll. What happens? Is there a difference between the first time I enroll and then after that? Do I have a certain period? All of that is confusing, but somebody that can straighten it out for us and let us know what we need to know about enrolling in Medicare or re-enrolling, if that's the name, is Susan Garland. Susan, welcome to Home and Family Finance.
Thank you so much.
You know, we were talking about how we were going to do. What's the most important message that you want to get across from your perspective about either first-time enrollment or re-enrolling?
Well, I would say there are two different things to say for each, or a different one, something to say for each one. If you are re-enrolling in Medicare Part D prescription drug plan or Medicare Advantage plan, don't just sit with what you have, because the plan could change considerably. So you want to take a look at your options again. I know it's a pain to put all your drugs into the Medicare plan finder and so forth, but it really pays off. I just changed my husband's plan from what he had last year. He's going to be saving a lot of money. We'll be saving a lot of money. Drugs that were not on his old plan will be on his new plan.
Uh-huh.
So it's really important to look at your options again. Look at your options every year. As far as the new enrollees, you don't have to. You're not affected by open enrollment period, which is between now and I think December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to follow the deadlines if you're turning 65. If you don't, I mean, then these are very complex deadlines, and a lot depends on whether you're still working or not working. You could end up without coverage for many, many months and be paying lifetime late enrollment penalties. So those are the two takeaways, and there are details for each one of those.
Okay, and folks, that's what I want you to understand. Listen, if you're over 65, you ought to be right up to the radio here listening. If you're not, you ought to understand this so you can help your mother, your grandmother, those folks in your family, because as you just heard Susan point out, is that if you miss the deadline or you don't enroll, it can be very, very costly to you. It can cost a lot of money. So I'll go back to the first one where you're talking about the re-enrolling period. There is a deadline on there, and it is December 7th. And so if you're in the plan, you ought to take a look at it, go through it, is that right, Susan, and decide whether – even if you're not sure, go ahead and fill out and make the application just to cover yourself.
Well, what you want to do is before you apply, you don't want to apply, first before you check to see what the plan has. But what you want to do, the best source of the, help would be to go to Medicare.gov and go to the plan finder. If you're not able to do that yourself, if you're not great with the computers, you could ask a friend or you could call up a number, Medicare number, and they will send you to a state agency that will help you choose a plan. And basically what you're doing is you're putting in the drugs and the dosages and so forth, and then what you will see is a bunch of plans, Part D plans, prescription drug plans,
right,
come up on your screen, and it will say certain things like, yes, all the plan, all my drugs, your drugs are part of the plan, or all your drugs are not part of the plan. Because oftentimes these plans will drop your drugs from their formulary, or they'll charge you bigger co-pays or bigger co-insurance for the drugs that that they do cover.
Right, right,
and
right.
So there's also an out-of-pocket number that you will see on that screen for each drug. It will show you, it's not just your premium that's important. It's also those co-payments and co-insurance. And what the website will do, will compare your estimated out-of-pocket costs for each plan for the year. So you'll say, well, wait a second. Yeah, this premium is lower on this plan, mm-hmm, but I have to pay $5,000 over the year based on my drugs right now, as opposed to $3,000 for this other plan that may have a higher premium. That out-of-pocket drug number is the most important number you should be looking at. And then just play around with the tool. Go online. Look when you might be hitting that donut hole when
right,
you have to be paying most of your drug costs out-of-pocket. See when you'll be hitting that. Some drugs, some plans, you'll be hitting it faster than others, and that will contribute to your out-of-pocket costs. So that's the key number you want to look at, what your costs are going to be and whether your drugs are on the formulary.
And Susan, tell us again, because look, folks, don't just sit on your laurels because you're in the plan. As you hear Susan saying, you've got to take a look at things because things do change. But if you're not sure, tell us again where they should go in terms of website. Okay, that's so important.
What they should go to Medicare.gov, or they should go to the State Health Insurance Assistance Program, which is www.shipcenter.org. Shipcenter.org. Think of a boat. Actually, I'm making a mistake. It's Ship Ta Center. Ship Ta Center. So that's where you should go. Medicare.
Okay.
The Medicare number will help you.
Yeah,
well.
And I'll give it to you. www.ship as in Paul, T as in Tom, A, C as in Center, ENTER.org. Okay, you can't go wrong, folks. If you just follow the encouragement here to look up these things for yourself and see. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to start looking now at the new enrollees, Susan, the people that are for the first time, the dangers if they miss that, and whether or not their spouses and all of that stuff that you know that we want to try to get out of you very quickly. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back with more.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is Susan Garland. She is editor, Kiplinger Online, and we're talking about what you need to know about enrolling in Medicare, or if you are already in Medicare, as you just heard us talk about, the things that should be your discipline in terms of what you do. Susan, let's talk about, I'm 65 years old. I'm on the job. I'm still working. I'm on the job at 65. I don't have to do anything, right? I can just let everything go right by, and I'm going to be taken care of.
Oh, sure. That's a great plan. Could be okay if your employer has more than 20 employees. But if you are working for a small company, if your company has fewer than 20 employees, you could really be in bad shape if you do not enroll in Medicare. And that's because the rules say that if you work for a small company like that, your Medicare becomes your primary payer. That means your insurance company that you have through your employer may not pay for your health care. Your insurance company will say, well, wait a second, I'm not required to pay this because Medicare is the primary payer. Uh-huh. That's the federal rule, and I do not have to, you know, pay for those health care costs. I might be able to pay what Medicare does not pay for, so I might be able to pay a little bit of Medicare only pays up to a certain amount,
right.
So maybe I could fill in some of the gaps, as the insurance company will fill in some of the gaps, but I don't have to pay what Medicare, would pay for. Now, oftentimes, the insurance company does not realize this for several months, and all of a sudden, it's going whatever through its records or whatever, and it will say, oops, I should not have been paying, the insurance company should not have been paying these costs, and I will go after the employee to recoup the money that I paid out for your health insurance. That's a lot of money that you may have to pay.
So you have to look at these yourself. You have to be your own advocate here and say, wait a minute, what's going on? What's the size of the company? Am I covered? Am I not? What do I need to do? You have to be your own advocate. Is that right, Susan?
Well, that's right, because even though your employer might be very well-intentioned, your employer may not know the rules either. There's a big move now with the Obama administration and a lot of the advocacy groups where they're trying to change this because they're realizing that quite a number of people are falling through the cracks. So there are all these new initiatives. The Medicare Rights Center, which is this great advocacy organization, is trying to get information out to employers. But don't expect that your employer will know what the rule is. Your employer could say, oh, you're covered by the plan. Don't worry about it. And even the plan administrator might say, don't worry about it. But you know what? You can't do that. You have to really find out, look at the number of full-time employees, and find out whether you should be, getting your own insurance. If you're working for a bigger company and you like your plan, you could stick with it. Not a problem. But here's another danger that a lot of people face, and that is let's just say I'm on my employer plan. It's great. I love it. And then I leave my job at, let's say, 60 or so. Mm-hmm. I have 8 months after leaving the job, to enroll in Medicare. Let's just say you're getting retiree health benefits, or you're getting COBRA. That is not, and you decide to take that for 2 years after you leave your job.
Right.
You could find yourself in big trouble. You have to apply for Medicare within 8 months of leaving your job, not 8 months after your benefits end.
Okay,
and
so the deadline is when you left the job, not when the – if your benefits go for 2 years, you that's not the deadline. The deadline is when you actually left the – physically left the job.
Yes, and let me tell you why, if we have a moment.
Sure.
Let's just say you have your health benefits, retiree health benefits, and you, at 67, your retiree health benefits end, and then you say, okay, you know, 2 years after, I was eligible for Medicare, I'm going to apply for Medicare. I've been covered by my retiree health
right.
benefits. It's October. You will not be covered until you cannot enroll in Medicare at that point until January. So you will not be able to enroll earlier than when your benefits expire. You'll have to apply in January. Your benefits will not Medicare will not start till next July. So you could go for months without health insurance.
Jeepers.
And not only that, Medicare will say, "Whoa, you should have applied at 65 when you retired, not at 67, even though you had retiree health benefits or COBRA. You should have applied back in 65. We're going to impose a penalty for every 12-month period that you had gone without. You will have to pay a lifetime penalty, which really could add up, especially if your spouse is involved too and should have applied for Medicare too.
So again, this is where do I get the information? Please help me again. Tell me where I should go. You've stirred me. I know I've got something to do, and I'm not sure who do I call. Where do I go?
You subscribe to Kiplinger's Retirement Report. But aside from that, where you get all our back issues.
Well, let's don't run over that so fast. All right, let's talk about where can I find? I know you wrote this, and all of this is written in. It's Kiplinger. Give me the website.
Well, you go to kiplinger.com, and if you want to subscribe, you could go to our store. It's just $30 a year. But anyway, if you want more information, the Medicare website has a lot of information. It's a really great site for people who want the kind of detail.
Yeah.
It's the website for the Medicare Rights Center, and that's medicarerights.org, or they have this thing called Interactive, where you could ask all the questions, and they have dozens of questions that they answer, and that's medicareinteractive.org. It's a fabulous site, and I recommend anybody who's trying to get information on how to enroll in Medicare to look at that site, because they talk about everything. If you're a federal employee, you name it, they have that information.
Do they also explain when your spouse is covered or not covered?
They will explain that as well. Now, if your spouse, if you're going to apply for Medicare and your spouse had been covered in your plan, at that point, let's just say you're 65 and it's in your retiring, or you work for a small company, your spouse has been covered by your plan, your spouse might be able to continue coverage on the employer plan. So you should ask about that. But if your spouse is not yet eligible for Medicare, I mean, she or he can go to, Obamacare. Could go onto the health exchange and try to find an individual policy. If your spouse doesn't have major health issues, might be able to get a good deal in the individual market. Might be able to get a subsidy depending on what your income is.
Susan Garland, editor, Kiplinger Online, thank you so much. You know what? You've inspired me and my audience to make sure we go and check. Come back and see us again soon, would you please,
thanks.
Susan?
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Nice to have you with us. Folks, coming up, you know what hacking is when it comes to flying? Hacking means you can fly first class free. What? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Listening to Home and Family Finance, I am your host, Paul Berry, and I thank you for staying with us and being with us here as we talk about things that are important, like traveling. Here we are just a few weeks away, or a week away or so from Thanksgiving, and then, of course, a few weeks after that, you know, the big holiday, Christmas holiday, if in fact you're Christian, and the Jewish holiday, Hanukkah. All of that wraps up, but most of us will be doing the same thing, that's traveling. We're traveling all over the place. And my next guest, who's been with us before, takes a look at things from the perspective of how can I save some money? How can I travel for little or nothing? Did that interest you? I thought it would be. David Wheeliver is my guest. He is the author of his book, Money, or at least he's founder of Money Under. David, did you write a book? I keep saying there's a book, but Money Under 30. Is there a book or no?
There isn't yet. It's actually something that's in the work. But Money Under 30 is a website that provides, you know, financial advice for young adults.
All right. Since we started, tell me, www. Or moneyunder30.com. Which one? How do you do it?
Yes, moneyunder30.com.
Okay. David Wheeler is my guest. He's a financial expert. He's been on the show before. And what caught my eye, David, is holiday traveling and the term travel hacking. Now, I had never heard. What is travel? What does that mean?
It's a good question, Paul. So travel hacking is this term that's kind of popped up for people who, you know, take saving on travel or getting free travel to extremes. So it can be anything from, you know, collecting the right miles that will get you what you want, whether it's a free ticket or whether it's a first class upgrade, and, you know, using, you know, not tricks that, you know, they don't want you to use, but just, you know, things that are out there, deals that are out there and programs that are out there that a lot of people don't know about it, and people figuring out how to take advantage of them and getting that free travel.
Legal tricks is what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, acceptable tricks, but in order to play them, you have to know about them. Talk to me.
Well, that's just it. And so, you know, this is something that frequent business travelers have known about for years, and they're the ones that are most often, you know, racking up so many airline miles that they can join what are called the elite programs at airlines and hotels. And basically, if you travel frequently enough, the airlines and hotels want to reward loyalty. And so what they do is they will give you, if there's a first-class seat available, they'll give that seat to their most loyal customers. And, you know, the interesting thing is if you walk onto an airplane and, you know, there's all these people in first class, at least half of them aren't rich. They didn't buy those tickets. They're there just because they are loyal and they have that elite status. And so when there's a seat available, as there often are, they'll get that for free. So that may not be available to everybody, especially this short to the holiday season, yeah, people wanting to travel. But there are a number of things you can do to either start accumulating, you know, miles that can get you perks like that, or save some money at least on the travel you will be doing.
And let's clear up the miles. It's important to participate in the miles programs and to get to stack up miles. I mean, that is a money saver if you do it, if you travel enough and you do it right.
It absolutely is. You know, I kind of have been loyal, per se, to Delta Airlines for a number of years. And
okay,
I used to do some business travel. Now, it wasn't a lot. I wasn't one of these road warriors traveling every couple weeks, but I would travel several times a year. And I would make a point to fly Delta anytime I could and save the miles. And then what I did is I also got their co-branded credit card, you know, the one they're always trying to sell you at the airports,
right,
and,
right,
you know, whatnot. Because actually, that allows you to, if you spend a certain amount every year, you get an additional bonus, you know, bunch of miles, like, lopped into your account. And it gets you other perks, too, like free checked bags and priority boarding and things like that. But it was able to kind of accelerate how many miles I could save. And, you know, long story short, I still have a ton in there. But last summer, I took my family. So we bought four seats to go to San Antonio from Boston for a family wedding. And we got those tickets in miles. It would have been over $2,000 in airfare.
Okay, okay. But is that the only way? I get it. Miles, okay. I've got,
yeah,
but most of us don't travel that much.
Right.
You know,
right.
So what? Any other way that we can hack here and move up or help ourselves?
Right. Well, so one of the things is, you know, about booking is, you know, it's either you book early or you book very last minute to try to get the deals. And last minute is very tricky because if you need to get somewhere, you may not always find that low fare, you know, that'll get you there. Some things to do are, you know, it can pay to use the sites that look at multiple airlines, because okay, if you're trying to get somewhere in the least expensive way possible, those aren't always published on one single airline.
You're
so
talking about
and matching.
Kayak and stuff like that.
Yeah, so yeah. Kayak, and then there's a couple ones that people should know about that help you monitor fares. So if fares drop, you know, if you have,
yeah,
some time, you can put it in. YAPTA.com is one, YAPTA, and Airfare Watchdog.
All right, to be continued. To be continued, David, we'll talk about this again because it's important. And there's other things you just said I want my audience to hear, but I've got to run, I've got to go. Come back and see me, would you please?
Absolutely.
All right, David Wheeler, my guest. We'll talk about him again and tell you how to hack righteously, folks. This is Home and Family Finance. Al Peterson, thank you very much. We'll be back next week. We hope you'll join us, too, right here, Home and Family Finance.